Hello and welcome to the podcast for episode 109 of Outlander, The Reckoning. I'm Ronald D. Moore, executive producer and developer of the Outlander series, and joined today by Matt Roberts, who wrote this episode.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be here.
All right, well, this is an interesting show. We knew starting off for the second half of the season, we wanted to sort of change the game a little bit and tell this episode from Jamie's point of view, which I thought would be a great thing to do because if you look at the overall series of all the books, it's really about Claire and Jamie, not just about Claire. So this was an opportunity to sort of pivot and tell the audience that doesn't know the books as well, hey, it's not just Claire's story, it's also Jamie's story. So let's tell this episode from his point of view. Now, and we're using Jamie's voiceover, obviously, for the first time to kind of root ourselves in his point of view. But we went kind of back and forth on this, as I recall, over the development of the script.
We did. The first draft of the script, we had Jamie's voiceover written in it. And as we went through the different drafts, it was pulled out just to because the conceit might not have worked because we were so used to hearing Claire. But then once you got into post, I think we decided, hey, let's put it back because it really worked. It might help tell the story, and it helped Mike to get into his mind.
Yeah, I think I remember thinking in post the first time I watched it, it felt like two separate episodes. There was an episode about Jamie rescuing Claire and the argument, and then the spanking scene, and then their relationship, and then get back to Castle Leek, and suddenly had all this politics. And I was looking for a way to give it a certain unity, and it also wasn't quite coming through that it was Jamie's point of view.
Exactly.
So then we went back to the voiceover.
And now it gives it a clear drive that it is Jamie's story and his POV throughout the whole thing, and it ties it together pretty nicely, yeah. I think.
I think we also came up with this structure of having a teaser like the pilot episode did.
Yes.
There's a tease and then main title was something I think we came up with in post, right?
It was absolutely in post, and it really works because this is kind of like our pilot for the second half of the season.
Yeah. So this one spent a lot of time in post, as I recall. When the cut initially came in, it was at least 10, maybe 15 minutes over, which
is a very
long time. So a lot of footage got cut, some of which you'll see in deleted scenes on the DVD, and some will be released online. So there's other scenes and extended scenes that was great stuff, but we just were so long, we had to make some hard choices as we got through it. Now, how much of this episode were you there to actually see?
What was going on here is the covering producer on 9 and 10 was Ira Bear, and he was there. We always have a producer covering each episode. And what happens is we have also a producer prepping as we go. So I was prepping the episodes, the next set of episodes, the next block, while we were doing this. So I was on and off throughout this shoot. I was on set quite a bit. That particular opening, I wasn't there, but because we had to go out on location, and we were finding locations for the next block.
I think also in this episode, I think Bear did a slightly different orchestration for our main title theme music, which is a little bit more masculine. It has a little bit more of lower-end instruments, cellos, and things of that nature, to kind of subtly kind of give you an idea that this is sort of Jamie's
right
as well.
And that works great, too. I mean, the music in this is just amazing.
Well, Terry would be very happy that in this episode her hand goes over the cloth. She hates it when her title goes over the over the stitching.
You know, everybody has their issue with
their
title.
Everybody's always complaining. I hear nothing but complaints about, this week my title card fell over that shot. I like it when my title falls on that shot.
Yeah, I'm lucky enough that mine stays on the dancing women.
This is pretty much steady. Ira's always getting the musket.
Yeah, like Meryl's got the dirk this year.
Meryl gets the dirk this episode.
And then Ron.
And I always get the field.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's beautiful. That's one of my favorite shots.
Yeah, that's a really great shot. Oh, and this is actually the only remnant of a deleted scene, right?
No, actually, we
did
filmed
we shoot this separately?
Yeah, this is one of the second unit things that I was lucky enough to
shoot. Oh,
you
shot this.
Yeah, I shot this.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And we pieced it, and then you pieced it together beautifully in post, and it was...
the last day of production?
That was our very last shot.
We
putting the kilt on. We ended on that, which is funny because when we first arrived in Scotland, The demonstration that Terry showed everybody was a, you know, amazing demonstration where a guy came out and put the kilt on mm-hmm. for all the executives and all the producers, and it was amazing. And it always stuck with me, and I wanted to get it into the show so that there was an actual flashback scene of Jamie
That's
putting
what
his
I'm
kilt
remembering.
On. Yes, it was written in the script, and Jamie was putting on his kilt and getting ready to go out to the field, work the fields. And we, for time, obviously, we had to cut it. So we wanted to rebuild it, so we made it our title card
That's
instead,
right.
so we shot it at a different time. And it just intrigued me how intricate it is putting on that kilt, even though we kind of shortchanged
yes,
it slightly.
Yes, it's very sketch.
Yeah, and it was kind of the same thing as when Claire, early on in the season, Mrs. Fitz was dressing Claire, and mm-hmm. we filmed that for 20 minutes.
Yeah, that went on.
That was kind of why we did it.
Now, this whole sequence of the escape, the rescue from Fort William, this was shot at Blackness Castle, which is our stand-in for Fort William. I remember scouting this very early before we started shooting as a model for different castles and locations. We were looking at it initially as, could this be Castle Leek?
Right.
And actually, we almost didn't even go in, because when you drove up to it, the exterior wasn't that imposing,
yeah.
wasn't that interesting.
Yeah.
But when we went inside, the courtyard was so heavy and such a fortress, that's when we said that was going to be fun.
And I believe this is the first location that you and Merrill went to when you arrived in Scotland.
It might be.
And in springtime, and you said it was the coldest
it was so
you've
cold.
Ever been in your
yeah.
life.
Because it's right on the water.
Yeah.
And the wind coming off that water got down into that rock, and
yeah.
it was just freezing.
Well, I mean, to Californians,
oh,
you know,
California,
and Scotland was, you know, that's a good fit.
Yes.
We filmed this part on stage.
Yeah, this is a green screen shot.
It was, and by the way, Sam doing all his stunts. So we elevated this probably 20, 25 feet off the ground, and Sam does all his own stunts. Sometimes, I'm sure David Brown, our producers, nervous about
yeah.
that, but he definitely did all this, and he swung in. This is all done on a set, and our designer Gary Still did a wonderful job building that.
I always liked the idea of resetting this episode and starting with Jamie meeting Horrocks and leading up to it. In the book, you follow Claire. The book is first person narrative. You're following Claire's story. And Jamie just appears in the window,
yes.
and the whole sequence plays out, and then he tells you how he got there.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, well, if we're going to do it from Jamie's point of view, let's take a couple steps back and work with him getting in, and the audience would be leaning forward going, oh, my God, he doesn't know yet.
Yeah.
When's he going to get there?
And I think that was the original idea you had in the breaking is, you know, Claire or Sam or Jamie just tells Claire how he did it, and we were like, let's see that.
Let's see it.
And that was a great idea because this, I think this really works.
Now, I love this whole scene. This is a great, and how much, I don't remember how much of this dialogue and of this scene is drawn from the book and how much of this is us playing around.
This is quite a bit from the book, and we obviously to fit the choreography, we have to make adjustments. And then
I love Tobias in this whole little
yeah.
scene. He's so good here.
The intensity is his intensity is off the charts.
And Katrina, I mean, this is a hard role in a lot
it
of ways because she's the damsel in distress, and it's easy to not believe that she's in trouble. But Katrina totally sells you on the idea that she is, you know, at risk of her life during this whole thing, and upset and angry all at the same time, and worried about where this is going to go, and it's. It's just the three of them really work well together here.
Yeah, when he screams at him to do it, it's almost Tobias just becomes Black Jack
mm-hmm.
in that moment for me. And to watch him play Frank at the same time,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing how he just completely embodies both
he's
characters.
He's just such a different person.
He's a different person in both. And Sam, this is very tough for Sam. You know, he has to. It's killing him. He wants to get
mm-hmm.
to the guy. He wants to kill him. He's got his hands on his wife, and he, you know, it's all facial. It's all gestures. It's all
and he mannerism. Knows the pistol's empty, so yes. He's really just trying to figure out.
Yeah,
and there's a dicey thing. When does he make his move?
When do I make my move?
Now this wasn't this shot at a completely different time than the rest by a different director and a different part of
this was shot in actually probably three parts because this part was there are parts of this that we took and we had to adjust slightly and but this part was all filmed at one time and then we came in and we did some pickup yeah. Second unit stuff to tie it all in together.
This was tricky, I remember, in the editing of process of cutting all the scenes down, the explanation for why the gun was empty.
And yes,
why, that originally was a conversation with Ned.
Yeah, and that was
and then
cut.
We cut that, so then I had to sort of, we put ADR lines in here where it's kind of said off camera quickly where he's explaining why the gun is empty.
Exactly, and then from some of those other moments you know, where you talked about that were cut, that's why, you know, we had to pick up some shots so they knew, yeah. You know, you knew what people were feeling, obviously.
That last piece of voiceover is the one regret I have on the show. I kept second guessing it and leaving it in and taking it out and leaving it in. I left it in when he looks back and looks at Jack lying there.
Yeah.
And says, "Oh, I thought about killing him."
Yeah.
And now I watch it and I go, "You know, shit, I should have taken that out because I should have just gotten him out of the room and not played that." But you know, these are the decisions you make. And this sequence changed a lot. We had a whole other scheme that was all about firing volleys and him
timing. Because we actually calculated how long it would take to load. We had our armor actually show us, and we calculated, and we gave that knowledge to Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
And the
idea being that they fire a volley,
yes.
And then he knew he had
20 seconds
or
to
whatever,
count. So
then they would run until they could reload again. But when we put the footage together, it just didn't work.
No.
We couldn't make the play. We didn't have the right pieces, and the timing was just kept falling apart.
So just
broomed all of that and just got them to the wall as soon as possible.
Yeah, and we also we went back and forth on this next thing. To show them in the water or to not show them in the water. How do you get out of this? And they're in the water.
Because it's like you don't want to spend too much time here.
Yeah.
You want to just move on. You want to. They jump off the wall, they escape. So do you see them hit the water?
Yeah.
Do you see them under the water? Do you see them swimming away? You know, it's like how many. And we just opted for the. Now, do we shoot that in a tank?
We did.
In a tank.
Yeah. This was filmed at. Place called Roslyn Glen outside of Edinburgh. There's ruins there. It's a park area. Beautiful. Well, that's kind of redundant when you talk about Scotland, isn't it?
I know. It's like what's not beautiful.
Yeah. This is an iconic scene from the book. I think all the fans will definitely know this one.
Yeah, this was a very important scene, and we took this was like a day of shooting,
a full day of shooting. We we do that quite often in shooting is when we know that these scenes are very, very important to the story. We usually block out a full day.
What I like about this is, I mean, there's a lot of things I like about this, but one of the things I like about this was it's the first moment in the story when these two characters really cut loose with each other.
Yes.
Because up until now, it's been all, it's just been falling in love.
Yeah.
Falling in love again. And they're just sort of, you know, teasing and flirting, and then they make love, and they, you know, the wedding and all that great stuff. But this is the first time where, the, like, more raw emotions, like, finally come to the surface, and it was really interesting. I was very curious to see how Katrina was going to play this. You know, and where how far she was going to go with him, and how far she was going to push him, and she gets right in his face.
She does.
I mean, she really
she does
has teeth in this scene, which I think is really fantastic.
And I love his confusion.
Yeah,
you know,
he really
his confusion.
Get it.
He just doesn't understand why this woman, you know, in his time, why she just won't do what he says.
Yeah.
It's every other woman does that.
Because it seems so obvious to him.
It does. And
it's
and
like, why do I have to explain this to you? Why am I explaining this to you? You should
exactly.
have been apologizing 20
why
minutes ago.
Exactly. You haven't apologized the whole time we've been riding.
I don't think I did it on purpose. To get back at me.
she's just very raw in this too, where there's nothing about, you know, her hair is down, yeah. her clothes are just
still ripped and
just
torn.
Ripped and torn, and she plays it like that too.
It's like, yeah, these are the shots of her I love.
Yeah.
And when they're just nose to nose, and she just won't give him an inch. She's just... Which is Claire to me. That was one of the characteristics of the character in the book that I loved, was Claire's refusal to back down in situations, even when it was really stupid.
Yes.
And she really should yep. take a step back. But she just... There was a part of her that just wouldn't give.
And you know, and that's the thing that Jamie loves about her.
Yeah.
You know, he can't help himself.
He recognizes
this is the woman I should be with. This is... Yeah. That her stubbornness is just as strong as his. And, mm-hmm. and they fit like a puzzle piece. Sam really went for it.
Oh, he just, the two of them just went for it.
He did. He, you know, we didn't rehearse this prior to or anything.
No.
So during the shoot on the day, we would run through things. And the fact that we knew we had the luxury, which we don't often have, you know, our production schedule is pretty tight, that we had a luxury of the whole day out there doing this. And when I say luxury, it was probably 30 degrees.
Yeah, usually.
But if you'll notice, it wasn't raining. So that's the luxury.
That's the
miracle. We were in heaven. But, you know, giving it time to have them try different things out, mm-hmm. and giving, you know, because for you in post, it gives you choices. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, as you know, we get limited in choices of...
Yeah.
of
that's why one of the things you always hear on TV and... producers complain about is a lack of coverage. You always want coverage. You always want more takes. You always want choices, because you're never quite sure until you put it all together in the editing room
yeah.
what is working and what's not working. And if you have a choice, sometimes it's the unexpected choice. Sometimes it's what they thought on the set didn't work at all that ends up being, oh my God, but there's gold in that. Look at that.
Exactly.
Know?
And I think you know, as always, you know, I've worked with Ron on a few projects now. One of the things that he always does is he does find those little golden moments, and I think that's a thing that you have is you know, some people have a gift in one thing, but when you're definitely a gifted person in post, because you can find
it. I like post. There's something. It's Joe Manosky, who was a writer on Star Trek, told me years ago that as a writer, you do your second draft in the editing.
You're right, exactly.
Which
and
is
you
really...
well, you told me that one of my yeah. first days working on Caprica with you. Is this is the writer's draft, and then there's the post draft,
yeah.
and I always remembered that, because you know, in the in between is the production draft,
mm-hmm.
where you have to actually film it. But you know, you when I'm producing a show, I always produce for a little bit for post too,
yeah.
Because I, you know, when I'm talking with the director or working with the director, I say, you know we got to give this is for Ron. We got to give Ron some stuff.
Give it for Ron.
You know, well, in a way, it helps me
yeah.
to negotiate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's
it's
a negotiation.
Times, yeah.
yeah. So in that, there's one of my favorite shots.
That's a great shot.
You know, we used a crane to pull back on that.
I remember at the beginning of the project, I kept saying, no cranes, no cranes, no cranes. And then I just kind of let that go. That's one of those early ideas that kind of went, why am I sticking to that? Because I had, in my head, I wanted a much more handheld Battlestar
yeah.
kind
yeah,
of
yeah,
feel.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And then as the show evolves, you kind of start, it finds its own rhythms. And I stopped objecting to cranes and, you know, Steadicams. And that
it, it did, but as we went along, you know, we found out that the big sweeping shots were best to do at the end of the day, because
yeah.
we always find out the most important moments are the moments with our two characters
yeah.
in tight, you know, talking, feeling the emotion. And those big sweeping moments, you would always tend to cut down, I think.
Yeah, and sometimes just cut them out. Sometimes
yeah.
they weren't
yeah.
as important as what was happening between the characters. Oh, I forgot to mention that the whiskey today is Talisker.
Talisker, yes.
Talisker 10.
And we'll be pouring our second glass
yes,
very
actually
shortly.
Actually, we'll be pouring our second glass right,
right
now.
Look at that.
This tavern is, I believe you said this is a redress of one of our many taverns that we did on the set, on our stages, right?
We did so many taverns. I believe David Brown asked us to stop doing taverns.
Yeah, it was like tavern, tavern.
Tavern, tavern, tavern. We,
you're trying to figure out where you set scenes. And where can they sit and talk is an interior.
Yes.
Well, There weren't restaurants. There weren't bars. There were just taverns. And that was kind of it.
That's where we kind of had to go. And this is the moment from the book, and we had to rework this slightly just because of you know, what had come before. This moment between Murtaugh and...
Yeah, Murtaugh. Yeah, well, there was a lot of conversation. I mean, this all leads up to the spankings.
Yes.
You know, and there was a lot of discussion in the writer's room, and we'd thought about, we knew just going to the project, this was going to be a key thing. So we had always talked about and endlessly worked this over on the page and then in post, you know, what you're showing, what you're not, what's the tone, how does it play? The actors spent a lot of time in rehearsal. This was just a pivotal scene in the entire series.
It is. It's. We did rehearse this on a separate day. Kat and Sam came in with Richard Clark and myself and Ira Bear, and we let them kind of go with it to see what would happen.
Yeah.
You know, because it is a iconic scene from the book, and I think everybody's, you know, in some people might say controversial, only because if you view it from, you know, 2015, it might be controversial, but in 1740, it's 44 here, mm-hmm. 1744, it isn't. It's just what happens.
And it's what is the scene, you know, people analyze the scene over and over again, I'm sure. You know, what is the scene about? You know, to me, it was always a scene. There's a line in here where Jamie says this is about justice, Clark.
Yes.
And to me, that was the defining idea of the scene. This is not about domestic abuse. This is not about him beating his wife. We stopped calling it the beating scene.
Yes.
You know, we started.
We actually never. We tried to always avoid, and I never mentioned beating. It was always spanking.
We always talked about it being spanking, which has a sense of corporeal punishment, mm-hmm. because you have transgressed. And that's the spirit in which he has. I thought it was really important that he approaches it from that angle, and that it's clear that this is about setting the scales. You know, when he says, "If you were a man, we would have lopped off your ear."
We would have. Yeah, you could have even been killed.
Yeah, you know, you could have even been killed. Well, you're a woman, and this is how this plays out in this circumstance.
And the other thing that Sam does so well in this scene is that the key to it is in. Not to make light of domestic abuse or anything, because that's a separate issue. This is, he's punishing her for a transgression. And if you look at his mood and the way he plays it, he's not angry in the slightest. There's no anger. There's no violence.
This is what we got to do.
This is what we got to do. In a sense, I think he's probably taking, Jamie, this is was always my take, was that Jamie was taking on how his father acted when he gave him
his
a spanking.
Him
he was giving him a lesson as he was going.
When you do something bad, you are punished.
And this is the reason why, so you don't do it again.
Yep. You explain why you're doing it, then you do it, and then you learn, and you remember that, and you don't do it.
Exactly, and this is exactly what it is. I think when we were doing our final playback with the music over it, we had a little...
Well, the music was key, because you had to figure out... Yeah. The music in this scene is really important. It's telling the audience when it's okay or when it might lighten up a little bit. And when do you want the audience to be worried all the way through it?
Yes.
Do you want them to say, oh, it's a comic scene?
Exactly.
What's the line? So, yeah, I remember in playback there was that moment. It was literally about 10 seconds, you know, on that cue. Bringing it in earlier or later. And we played it both ways, and then we went around the room.
We did.
Asked opinion. There were a lot of women there, a lot of men. We all kind of went and kind of talked it through, played back and forth several times.
And surprisingly, many of the women in the room wanted to play it more serious.
More darker. Yeah.
Darker. And I think we pulled it back to a nice middle ground.
Yeah, it is a nice middle ground. The music is just, there's just enough lightness in the music to tell you it's going to be okay.
Yes.
Because what I wanted to have, you wanted to feel like it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then cutting down to these guys downstairs
absolutely.
Really lightens it.
And one of the first times we ever do that, we don't usually cut away from their perspective.
Yeah, this is very,
very rare that we do that. But we needed to do it in this instance.
Yeah. So kind of, and it also told you that those guys, what their perspective on it.
Exactly.
They expect this, and this is the thing, and it's not going well up there. But
the other thing I like about this is that Claire, through Kat, is not going gently into that good night.
I love when she kicks him in the face.
Yeah, she kicks him in the face. She's fighting it. This is not. And the comment the guys are making is that we don't know who's winning.
Yeah, who's winning? Who's punishing who?
Yeah. Much of this dialogue was taken straight out of the book.
The mood in the book in the scene had a slightly more sexual connotation.
It was. And
I sort of I remember we talked about it, and I think I was the one who kind of said, let's not play that element.
Right? We even in the first draft, there was no that sexual part of it was taken right out because it just didn't feel right visually.
Visually, it's different. A lot, and I say this over and over again. It's different when you see it than when you read it, and that was one of those key points that I thought we don't want to play that visually here.
Yes. And I'll tell you, it's one of my favorite scenes. I mean,
I think they do a
wonderful job. They play it so well.
I'll stand by that scene. I think that's really good. I'm proud of it. I think we did. I think it's good.
And yeah.
I think it's a good piece for the show.
I love this moment too. As husband, wife, you know, every couple knows how they've been in a big fight. You don't know how to make up. You know who's going to talk first.
Yeah.
This was shot actually, you know, in the Highlands. We went up there and shot a lot of this stuff in the Highlands, and well, that's at Doon Castle, but some of the most beautiful country you'll ever see.
Oh,
I mean, you know, it's amazing.
Now there's a whole lifted piece here that we shot a sequence of them coming into the courtyard, and there was no one there to greet them, and it was spooky and weird, and why aren't they coming? And then Claire and Jamie walk down the hall and kind of are still at each other a little bit, and then walk into the room and are surprised. And again, it was just one of those things we had to cut for time.
Timing. Anyway, it was all, once again, it's all good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't lose a lot of stuff because it's not good, that's for sure.
And this was also a slightly longer scene. There was a beat here where Leary is actually in that room.
Yes.
Across the room, and she and Jamie make eye contact, mm-hmm. and we realize, oh, something's going to happen there. But again, just losing it, you know, for time.
Yeah. And this was the two episodes 9 and 10 back to back is when we started to feel the pangs of losing the Great Hall.
Yeah,
I mean it's such an amazing set.
Such a great set. It was kind of the home of the show. You kind of felt like the home was the Great Hall.
It was, and when we first walked in there, I remember when we first lit the candles.
Mm.
And
that candle test.
The candle test in the Great Hall, and people came out of the woodwork to see it. It was amazing. We stood there, and it was silent for half a minute or a minute, and we were just looking and going, wow, this is really happening.
It felt like a real place.
A real place. It's really going to be amazing, and it only got better from that.
And there were a couple more scenes that got cut here along the way. There was a scene where Jamie and Claire first get to their room, and you can see that they're still sort of spiky with one another. And then there was a great scene with Murtaugh and Jamie talking down in the kitchen.
Yes.
Cut as well, which
was
really good. That was about women and marriage.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where Murtaugh talked about falling in love. He was in love with Ellen. Was that the first time that we mentioned it?
Yeah, we first mentioned Ellen. I love Nell. She just really makes you feel that had Claire not been, she had a chance.
Oh, she had a chance. I always felt she did have a chance.
She had a chance.
He was going that direction.
Yeah. And you know, no matter what she turns into in the later books, as we know.
Because that's all a part, you know, then that's a different path she took. And
she had
took
to, and, yes, she had to take a different path with a different husband, you know, just... That's a different thing. But if what her life might have been had she just married Claire, I mean, married Jamie, and Claire hadn't existed or popped into this time.
Well, that's why, you know, in the editing process, you know, I moved around some of the pieces towards the end. So it ends, the biggest choice he makes is the choice not to be with Leary at the end. Because I was looking for some sort of emotional through line from Jamie's perspective that tied everything together. And I think in the scripted version, it was the decision to convince Colm to give the gold back.
Yes,
right? That was the big moment. That was the big
for the political story.
Political story. Yeah. But I kind of wanted. We argued about it internally for a while. I felt like the emotional story of Jamie and Claire as his wife, the acceptance and forgiveness on both sides of that, was personified and dramatized by the decision not to go with Leary.
Yes.
But that's ultimately the heart.
Yes.
Given everything, he still has a chance to get out of it if he wants it, but he opts not to, and then it brings it all home. Now, this whole sequence is all stuff that was not in the book, but I thought it was a great... I really liked it when we came up with it in the writer's room, talking more about the Jacobite Rebellion and the gold and, you know, the question of the gold and what Colum knew and what he didn't, because it just sort of... I liked embroidering on the political backdrop of the series and of the time of the Jacobite Rebellion, which plays so strongly, you know, going into the second season. So all this is kind of something that we just sort of manufactured, and it was also just a great opportunity to see Colum and Dougal. They're such great actors and great characters, and more time spent with them was just gold, so to speak.
Yeah. No pun.
No pun.
What I love about Gary is you have Sam, who's 6-something, you know, Graham, who's 6-something, you know, these big imposing guys, and he's the biggest man in the room.
Yeah, you're right. Gary's the biggest man in the room.
Gary's the biggest man in the room, and he plays it like that. Yeah. And I love that. And they know it, too. And there's something in the way that they play the scene, and they know he's big. Even though they look down, visually, they're looking up to him. And it's and we're talking about some great actors in this room right here.
Well, this moment coming up where Colum and Dougal go toe-to-toe right here. Yeah, he's got a good foot on him.
Yeah.
Dougal does.
Oh, easy, yeah.
But there's no question. You know he's not going to go past a certain point.
Yeah.
He's not really going to cross the line here. And there's such an acknowledgement of who's really the boss. It's that old thing about, you know, playing a king on stage, you know, and not people have to give you space, and, you know, you carry a certain presence. And Gary definitely personifies that.
He definitely does. And that's the move. He gets into his face, but Gary doesn't move an inch.
And Dougal just does it, which is great.
He does. He knows.
He just leaves.
He knows.
He doesn't say, fuck you. He just, like, he's really okay.
And he doesn't lean in. Nope. There's nothing there.
Nothing. He just walks out.
I think both Ned and Jamie know they're up Schitt's Creek here, too.
Yes.
It's how do I get out of the room?
I know. How can I get out of here quickly?
Yeah.
And Jamie, I'll just be leaving. I got to go.
Yeah. Wait. I love the room.
I know
the tapestries
really
are
great set.
The bird, we actually use real birds.
I know, it's a real bird.
Real birds in the cage, real live bird on the perch.
There was a whole second half to this scene that we cut for time. There were Jamie stays, and it was a much longer dialogue about Jamie's place in the hierarchy and the line of succession, right?
And moving on to become the Laird.
Right.
And it plays off of episode 4 a little bit about how if he was backed enough, he could succeed Colum as the Laird.
Yeah.
And I think that we've been playing the story as that this is Jamie is Colum's choice, even though that Colum's or that Dougal is his brother. Jamie is his choice.
But Colum's gonna run him through right there. I love this too. You can just see it. Look at Jamie.
Yeah.
He's barely listening. He's already thinking, I'm getting in bed tonight.
Yeah.
You know, she's not mad. Maybe I can slip in here. Maybe it's going to be okay.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
I'm not bringing up anything. Okay, I'll just...
Keep it quiet. And this was extended a little
I'll
bit,
just
too.
I'll take off my clothes slightly.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll ease off my jacket. That was a little longer, too. We had to cut for time. Yeah, it just they had a little more banter, essentially. But... Think again, cuts to the chase.
Yeah.
You're not getting in bed with me.
Now, suddenly you'll notice that it's snowing, and we got snow on the ground, it's winter. That's all because of this scene.
Yes.
This scene, as shot, the snow in the scene, for the most part, is practical. These are snow candles, I think they're called, which I don't... It's like you burn them or something, and they spread out the snow.
You know, our special effects, they do some special stuff that I don't know the intricacies of it, but yes, I think that's how it works.
Something burns.
Burns, and then it releases this.
The problem was that it was only in this scene, so we were looking at this in post, and none of the other scenes had snow in them.
None.
So we had to, digitally, like that previous establishing shot of Dune Castle, I had to add snow into that. And you'll see coming up, there's a scene with Murtaugh
and
Jamie.
And
the breath, all this, we had to, now, well, wait a minute, if it's going to snow in that scene, it has to snow in these other scenes.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, thanks to digital magic, you can now add snow into subsequent scenes.
And as we still talk about to this day in the writer's room, how lucky we were over the course of this year of shooting, is Scotland had a mild winter.
They really did.
And we were able to shoot. Because these episode 9 and 10, we shot this in the dead of winter, January and February. And I think Ira will probably disagree, but it was quite warm. For Scott, it was quite warm. We were bundled up, but there wasn't much snow.
Yeah.
I mean, this year they had a ton of snow.
Yeah, 2015, there's a ton of snow.
So we wouldn't have to worry about this.
I always really liked this idea, and one of the things I wish that we had played more or had more time to play or had like a whole episode was the division between Dougal and Colm.
Yeah,
and this thing about. All the Highlanders picking sides and the bubbling tension of that and the threat that it could like split the Clan Mackenzie, which I really liked. And it's here. I mean, it's definitely in the show, but it was so rich and so interesting. I always wanted to really expand it into a much bigger story to really see the politics playing out in Castle Leek. And, you know, I wanted to know which side Mrs. Fitz was going to
pick,
you know, and where Nell was, Lyra was going to be. And I wanted to sort of see the division form, you know, more strongly. We just didn't have time to do it.
Yeah, it would have been, I mean, had we had 20 episodes, we could have done it.
Like this scene is what I'm talking about. All the snow in this scene is added on the castle. It's also the sky I brought down into a gray overcast because this was shot on a bright, sunny, clear blue day.
It was.
It was like, well, that's not going to cut well against that big, snowy scene out in the forest. You know, the tools you have now in post-production in terms of light and look are really unbelievable. You can really play this as overcast when it was shot, you know, a really bright, sunlit day.
Yeah, and you can see the harsh shadows coming
off
of
that.
The harsh shadows you can tell, but
that's what gives it away.
I think it looks beautiful and
yeah, you'd have to analyze it before you feel
yeah, I mean
it.
Yeah, if you just watch it, you're not going to notice
it. It's not like in the 50s when you're doing a day for night shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, day for night. So like this scene, as I said, this scene used to be much closer to the end. This used to be...
It was, and you flipped it.
And this came earlier now.
I usually agree with your flips.
Usually, and you know, I think these are subjective, debatable points. You know, it's really...
And that's the thing.
A lot of this is just sort of, you know, how you feel. And I think a lot of the debate we have internally on the show on a lot of things... Everyone has a pretty legitimate point of view of how to play the story. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not so much right or wrong, it's just... Eventually, somebody has to make a choice.
Well, that's you,
and that falls to you.
So, and
because this is a legitimate climax to the show,
it is. It is, and I think structurally, it was. You know, in the sense of we knew that we were going to get to the relationship of it all, but the fact is of the political plot points, this climax.
This is the climax.
Yeah. And it was, I think we did, this was later in the show. This would play later in the show.
Yeah.
This was trimmed down slightly too, but you got to the point. I mean, it gets to the point.
I think we ended earlier than the scene ended.
Yes.
Because I think there was more dialogue between Carl and
Jane. It was just, you know, a little bit more about the Klan stuff.
Yeah.
Because you cut it earlier.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't play here.
It called back to some of the earlier
conversation. It called back to the earlier conversation.
Right.
So had it would have just been some ghost sitting here, you're going, wait,
yeah,
what does that mean?
Because...
The birds.
It's always tricky to cut like that, to do a time cut within the same scene. Mm. It's always, you're sort of always, you know, it's hard. And it kind of trips you up at first, like, oh, wait, there's a time cut there.
It is, but I think...
It still kind of trips me a little bit.
I think it works, though, because you add... You start on Dougal and Ned, so you know
something
happened.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't planned for. You had to...
We did that in post.
You literally did that in post.
Like, oh,
yeah.
This is going to be a weird time cut.
Yeah.
You're trying to figure out exactly how to do it.
I mean, because we try to, in the script, plan for time cuts.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that when you get into post...
And the easiest way to do a time cut is just to cut outside. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Cut outside, establish her, and go back in. But over the course of a show, you start feeling, well, how many times do you want to cut outside to see a building?
Exactly.
Like, there's a story that Aaron Spelling... when he was doing Melrose Place and the Aaron Spelling shows, used to insist that every time cut you had to cut outside and see the apartment building.
See the apartment building,
Place.
Right.
Like, you could not just do an interior
cut. Exactly.
You always had to cut outside, do the establisher, and go inside.
Exactly.
And it was,
oh my God.
And if you watch that show, it was maddening. It was just like, oh my God.
And believe it or not, we don't do a lot of establishers.
Not that many.
You know, I don't write them. I almost never write them in the scripts because I assume they'll happen.
I tend to write them, but that's a reflex left over from Star Trek.
Right.
I was always, and then Exterior Enterprise entering orbit.
Oh, right.
Exterior Enterprise at warp, and I'm just used to, like, a time cut means I got to cut outside of the ship and then go back in.
Because I write very visually, you know, coming from the photography background. I always
write
very, very visually, and I don't think we always need the establisher.
Yeah.
But I know when you get into post, you'll go, I need to show them where they are.
Sometimes it gives you a breath
and
lets you take a beat to go in or set a mood or
something.
Exactly. But it can be easily
overdone. And the page is always different than the visual.
You never quite know.
And that's why, you know, I mean, that's why we do sometimes we do pickups.
Yeah. Sometimes you're going back because you realize in retrospectively, oh, I need this shot. And I didn't think I did at the time.
And this show, what's so great about this show, when we do that, we spent 2 weeks at the end of episode or season one doing pickups to give you the things in post to put the puzzle pieces all together. And, you know, you only know that when you see the footage.
And this show is really complex because of the logistics involved in the physical production. We cross-board a lot of things, which means you're shooting scenes together that are in the same set or the same location, but you might be shooting them wildly out of sequence.
Absolutely, yes.
Together, and so the puzzle is even more complex
than
normally what I'm used to.
Yeah, whereas we shot the rocks skipping along the pond here, or the stream, we shot those at the end at the end of the season.
Yeah, very.
We did that all second unit stuff. And
yeah, because this was supposed to be just like not the climax of the show. It was the penultimate climax. It was just the emotional, and he was just skipping stones.
He was.
Later, I said, oh, let's open the entire show with him skipping stones, and we needed more shots.
You did, and you wanted a certain angle.
Certain angle. That
I remember actually setting the camera, and we were like, nope. Ron wants this angle, so let's get it. And we were down in the mud, in the muck, trying to get the angle that you wanted. And then we had...
And cursing. He has no idea what it'll take to get this shot.
He has no... And there's midges, man. There's midges.
He better like this shot.
And then we had four or five guys coming out going, hey, look, I know how to skip rocks.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, let's see.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And then the kerplunk, kerplunk. And then we finally got Ozzy, who's the camera operator, throwing. And he really did a good job. He did a nice job.
Okay, this scene was an endless source of controversy.
Oh, boy.
Up until the very, very, very last minute. And the question was, do they kiss or do they not kiss? How close does Jamie come to being tempted by Lyra? I was always arguing for more temptation.
Yes.
And having their lips meet and having her kiss and then pull back. Other, you know, many, there were many other people.
I think if knives were involved, blood would have been shed.
This took a lot of, there were a lot of versions.
Yes.
Like frame by frame, how close do their lips get?
It was.
And Meryl fought a good, valiant fight, and ultimately I said, all right, you know what? You're right, and gave it to her. And I think there was, in the studio weighed in, and the network
of all the scenes other than the spanking, this scene had the most controversy.
Yeah, because it was a question of how tempted is he? And, my take was, the more tempted he is, the better.
Yes.
The deeper he goes into the darkness, the stronger it is for him to pull out of
it.
Yes. You know, that it takes a... If you go further in and then you step out, you've really like, oh, I've got to go all the way back out here. But the counterpoint was, well, but his love for Claire is so strong that he wouldn't even go into that darkness, that he would stay on the side of the line. And that was the debate.
And that's easy to say outside the moment.
Yeah.
In the sense is, these two actors put themselves in the moment. Because we even, you know, we believe in the moment, we said, don't kiss. And in the moment,
that's right.
They just could not to that place because of the tension and the passion.
So suddenly, I have a choice.
I have a choice, yes.
Suddenly, I'd like to do that choice.
Yes. We filmed this completely out of sync with, too. This was the last day of filming.
Because, at that point, we had decided, we're going to do the voiceover.
Yes.
And I needed another piece of voiceover because setting up, what's he thinking about before he goes into this last
Exactly. And we had torn down half the set.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And we left a little bit of corridor. So we took a camera, and we filmed Sam coming through to give you at least a walkthrough so you can talk. And this was to lead into this scene.
Mm-hmm.
I love the quiet in this scene.
I think this is a great scene. There's one thing that tortures me in this scene, which is just a pet peeve of mine in film. I don't like people talking to each other in a mirror. It drives me a little crazy.
I think
it's a cinematic conceit that
I agree.
Never happens.
I agree. I would say that it wasn't written this way. You know, you have a lot of people to deal with.
Sure.
And had it been me, I would have shot it slightly
different. It's just one of those things that, and it's not like, no one does this. This is like a common technique.
It is.
It's a pet peeve of mine that, when I'm watching a movie or TV show, there's often a setup where two characters are like talking to each other through a mirror, and I have never done that in my life, and I'm not quite sure anybody does.
It's the other my pet peeve is when someone's angry and they completely destroy something of their own.
Yeah.
They rip all this stuff. They destroy their own thing, and it's like you see it all the time, and I think that's your mirror shot.
Yes.
Yeah. And this was obviously from the book. We had to adjust a little bit. The callback is from episode 4 on our. I love how stoic she is. I mean, it's all in her eyes. Is Kat has an amazing ability to do a lot of acting in her eyes. You'd think she'd been doing this for 20 years.
It was one of the things that I said when we were looking for an actress. I said, this is a character that you have to watch think. We need an actress who I can watch think without saying anything. And she is that person.
She is.
It's really unbelievable.
I remember watching her casting tape the first time saying, we need to see more of her.
Yeah.
And we definitely need to see that this, she needs. Same with Lotta. We saw Lotta, who read for Kat. She read for Claire. And we walked in and said, that's Galus.
And she's so Galus.
She's not Kat. Let's do Galus.
Is she Galus?
Yeah. These two are just so good together.
I know. They're just
they really,
really
are.
Very good.
So the pats on the back to a lot of people for picking these two people.
Oh, I know. I mean, casting is one of those mysterious alchemies that eludes me. It's not my strong suit. I've never said it is. I always like to sort of have people involved in production who are better at it than I am.
No. Meryl loves it.
Meryl loves it.
Ira loves it. And
I hate it.
And I think you and I are, you know, I mean, I think I can see, you know, like, oh, hey, I like that person. But, you know, we're like, there's other people who really enjoy that part.
Yeah. Because it is a thing. It's being able to see something in the actor.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're it's almost like whether or not they give a good reading.
Yes.
In the audition, you see something in them and you realize,
yeah.
Because there's, you know, many are the stories of the actors who give great auditions who are lousy on camera.
Absolutely.
And vice versa.
Yes.
And you have to be able to somehow see through that.
Yeah. And you have to see the long run.
Yeah.
You can't just see the moment. You have to go, hey, they're going to be able to do everything we are going to ask them to do.
Yeah.
And these two have done.
Oh,
geez.
Just the chemistry here is so perfect.
Yeah. And believe it or not, I think, you know, you can have duels and explosions and all the things we do on our show. These scenes are always the most intense.
These are the
always
scenes. This
the
is what it's about.
The most
really
difficult in the sense of, you know, getting it right.
I feel like when I see them, they're the moments that I feel the most suspense, the most, you know, my emotions come to the fore. It's not so much the jeopardy in the show.
Exactly.
It's, you know, it's always these scenes.
And in writing these scenes, you know, for me, you know, in traditional television, you do a 2 or 3 page scene, and then you're out.
Yeah.
For me, with the Kat and Sam, or the Claire and Jamie of it all, is you've allowed us this to breathe. We can go 4 or 5 pages, 6 pages.
Yeah, let the show breathe.
And let the shows breathe. And I think this is one of those scenes that we really let the show breathe.
Really let it go.
And we let our two main characters, who not only we love, but the fans love, spend a lot of time with. Because no other show would do this.
Yeah, and I just believe strongly that you got to trust the audience, respect the audience, believe that the audience is just as smart as you are.
Yep.
And if you like it and you think it's good,
don't
second guess it and say, well, but the audience won't have the patience for it, or they're not, you know, I get it, but they won't like it. And just trust that they're smart.
And they'll want to spend the time with these characters.
I don't know why, but I love that shot that starts on her foot.
Yeah.
Just there's something about the way her foot sits, you know, the angle of it. There's just something so sexual and sensual.
And this was a full day.
This is a full day?
Full day. You know, we spent a lot of time on this, and for good reason. It's the climax.
The climax of the show.
Literally. Climax of the show. So we did spend a lot of time. We allowed a lot of time, and I think we smartly do that. And we have a producer in the UK, David, David Brown, who he fights us on a lot of things, but he does know kind of where the story is.
Carve out time. He'll make time.
Carve out time. He knows that. Hey,
yeah,
this is the scene. He does.
He's very
protects
smart about
things. He does.
I mean, one of the things that, you know, is a regret of mine as I've moved into, as I show run shows, is that I don't have as much day-to-day contact with the set as I used to.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's like you lose that intimacy with the day-to-day production. You know, in the pilot, I'm there a lot, I'm there like every day.
Yep.
And then you kind of step back and have to sort of look at
well, I mean,
scripts
but you have to realize you have scenes coming in, days coming.
That's why it is.
Yeah.
I get it. But there is a joy to being there every day. There's
sure.
a joy to being with the cast and the director and watching each rehearsal and experiencing it in real time and having that kind of, you know, tactile experience with the show. It's the same thing with the writer's room. You know, it's I don't get to sit in the writer's room as much as I used to when I was a member of the staff. And so as you move up the ladder and
you're always a member of the staff.
I'm always a member of the staff. I'm proud of that.
I
will always take great pride in saying I was a member of the writing staff of Battlestar Galactica and Outlander and Star Trek. That's if you ask me what I do, I always say I'm a writer.
No.
So
we don't get to spend as much
time.
Exactly. I mean, and there's a lot of times when we're in the room and I mean, we're going back and forth, and we're talking about this story and that story, and many, many times we're like, God, man, we wish Ron was here, you know,
or not.
Well,
thank God he's not.
No. I mean, that's when we go completely off the reservation. But when we were like, God, we wish Ron was here, because you know, ultimately, you know, we know it's like this decision has to be made. And a lot of times we look, you know, we look to you. It's like, hey, we need to make this.
Yeah, and it's great, and I love the role that I have. But there's just a sense of, you do have a sense of losing certain things as you move along.
Sure.
And you're not
with the troops. You're not with the troops.
You're not with the troops.
Yeah.
And I miss that part of production.
You know,
I miss that part of the writing staff.
It's funny because I was just watching Band of Brothers, and there's a moment when Winters gets promoted.
Oh yeah.
And that's what that just made me think
exactly
about. Is that you got promoted out of the company, and he wants to be in
you
the company.
You want to be in the company.
And the colonel says, you can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's you. Because, but you have a
that's
lot of...
That's what it
is. You have a lot more things on your plate now.
It's different. And I love the position I have now, and I wouldn't give it up. But there are just moments and times when I'm watching this and I'm hearing you talk about being on the set that day, and it's sort of like... Oh, sure, you know, I kind of wish I was there. And when I'm in Scotland now and I go down to production and we are shooting, I'll go in and then, you know, I'll be here for 20 minutes and then I've got to go take a call or I've got to go look at this.
You don't call. I mean, you got to make this decision. You got to do this. You got to do it. I mean, your time is, I mean, it's different.
Well, that's the show.
That is.
I think that's a really good episode. I'm very proud of it. I think it's a really good way to kick off second half of the season.
I was very proud of it. I was very lucky to be able to write 109 and I mean, thank you for assigning that script to me because
you do a great job with it and you did.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, all right. Thank you all for listening, and I'll be talking to you again on 110.
The 110.
Good night and good luck.